3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eighth strikeout for the King tonight, and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Wow, what a ball game that was last night as the Mariners, they claim victory over Tampa Bay. So they've taken the series from Tampa Bay. They are looking for the sweep today. The King, Felix Hernandez. Yes, it is Felix Day. He'll take the mound this morning as the Mariners go for the sweep. This is a big day. Mariners looking for the sweep. They already have. They've guaranteed themselves a winning road trip and then coming home and taking on Cleveland, red-hot Cleveland, for four games coming up at Safeco Field over the weekend. They're looking for the sweep. They've already taken their second series in a row here on the road. This all after a 6-3 homestand. So Mariners playing some good baseball, and last night was that game was amazing. There are a lot of aspects to it that we're going to dive into. We'll recap the game last night here in a second. Felix on the Hill, this is an epic pitching matchup today. Of course, Felix, my opinion, the best pitcher in the American League right now. Chris Archer is one of the best in the American League right now. He is really, really good. Probably doesn't get, I think I said the same thing about Odorizzi the other day too, but Archer is even better. He doesn't get the attention at this point that I think he will be getting in the not-too-distant future. I mean, the tier after Felix, you know, who's in it? David Price, Sonny Gray, Corey Kluber, you know, guys like that. And I think Chris Archer is right there with him. He is outstanding. So we'll take a close look at this pitching matchup today. Also, Lloyd McLennan is going to talk some Felix. We're also going to talk a little Felix with runners in scoring position, a subject that doesn't come up all that often, and it probably should come up more often because he is nails with runners in scoring position. It's part of why Felix is so good and his numbers so ridiculous. He just locks teams down with runners in scoring position. So we'll get to those coming up. Also, Shannon Dreyer will talk to Jay Happ, the starter yesterday, and he has had some very interesting teammates on the pitching side of things. He's going to talk about that coming up. Some really, really good pitchers he's been teammates with. So we'll talk about that as well. But let's dive into the game last night. And this was a thriller as Jay Happ was on the mound against Tampa Bay. And the Mariners, and this is becoming a little bit of a trend where the Mariners score early in the ball game. And they welcome back Austin Jackson to the lineup, and he paid dividends right away.
The 2-2, swinging a liner right past Colomayan into center field. Holy smokes. Screaming Mimi right past the starting pitcher for the Rays. Colomay had to duck to get out of the way. Welcome back, Jackson. Austin Jackson with a leadoff single. There goes the runner. Pitch on the way, a ball. The throw down to second by Rivera, and it gets on by Beckham into center field. Safe at second. Jackson gets up, moves along to third. A steal for Austin Jackson. Yes, indeed. Welcome back.
Well, that's a good start. Base hit. Steal second base in scoring position and gets knocked in like clockwork.
Colomay delivers. Swinging a line drive into right field for a base hit. Here comes Jackson on to score. 1-0 Mariners lead. RBI single for Seth Smith. And how about Austin Jackson? A leadoff single, steals second, and scores from third base. Nice to have Mr. Jackson back in a clutch base hit early by Smith.
Kyle Seager would end up with a base hit to drive in a run two in the first inning. So the Mariners put two on the board, but Jay Happ and the M's would give the two back as Tampa scores two in the bottom of the first. The first took about an hour. Both pitchers really labored, Happ throwing a ton of pitches, which was a big concern considering the Mariners were pretty shorthanded in the bullpen, just six guys now with Farquhar going down and some other guys that Lloyd McLennan wanted to keep down. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. That became very relevant later in the ballgame as well. But Jay Happ, and give him a lot of credit, this was a veteran start for Happ. He labored early, threw a ton of pitches early on, But there he is. He gives up run in the third, but he ends up giving the Mariners six innings, six badly needed innings because of the shape of the bullpen. So he goes six, gives up seven hits and a walk, but only three runs. Really good start and a veteran start. Throws 111 pitches after the rocky beginning, but gave the Mariners innings that they badly needed. After that, Tom Wilhelmsen took over an inning and a third. As we move to the eighth, the score's still the same. 3-2, Tampa Bay the lead. And the problem when you're facing Tampa Bay, this is not the formula to beat Tampa Bay. You do not want to be down in the eighth and the ninth inning because they have one of the best 1-2 bullpen punches going right now in the big leagues. Jake McGee, a lefty, a flamethrower, he can bring it. He was their closer last year and was absolutely lights out, completely dominant. 73 games a year ago, a 1.89 ERA. He fanned 90 in those 71 innings. He only allowed two homers all season as the closer, locked down 19 saves for Tampa Bay last year, but he is outstanding. So he's on in the eighth inning, and things slowly but surely start to come together for the M's in the inning. There's some great ABs. Weeks battled, picked up an infield base hit. It's actually hit hard up the middle, diving play by Cabrera, but Weeks beat it out. Good hustle. Blomquist on to pinch run for Weeks. And then Cano put up a nice battle with two strikes, and that is a tough matchup. Lefty on lefty there, and McGee can be a lefty killer. But Cano dumps a base hit. And then this ended up being a pretty big play involving a former Mariner.
The 1-2 pitch, here she comes, swinging a ground ball to the second baseman, off the glove of Franklin, off to his left, heading for first is Cruz. He's going to make it. Franklin retrieves the ball way to his left. Holy smokes, the Mariners get a break, and they've got the bases loaded with nobody out.
So Kyle Seager striding to the plate against McGee, who gave up two home runs all of last year, had not given up a home run to a lefty since September of 2013. It had been forever. So Seager strolling to the plate without the Mariners having hit a grand slam since 2013. And what do you know?
Here's the pitch. Swung on, well hit ball. Deep to right field. Back she goes, and this one is gone. Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard. It is grand salami time. Kyle Seager with his eighth home run of the season. The Mariners went without a grand salami all last year. A four-run shot for Kyle Seager, scoring Blomquist, Cano, and Cruz. And it's now the Mariners 6 and the Rays 3. Dave Niehaus, that one is for you.
How about that? Kyle Seager, grand salami, having a monster game and already driven in a run. The Mariners have the lead. Fernando Rodney comes on, but things did not go his way in the bottom of the ninth. DeJesus, he singled the left. Guyer just kind of dumped one into right field, not hit hard, just a parachute job down the line that got down, and then a hit by pitch. So then Tampa Bay with the bases loaded against Fernando Rodney.
The 1-2 pitch, swing and a fly ball deep to left field. Going back is Zachary, leaps up and it's off the top of the wall. Bounces way away, one run will score, two runs will score. Butler around to third. Off of the ball is Jackson, gets the throw in. Evan Longoria with a double, two-run score. And it's now the Mariners 6 and the Rays 5.
I'm telling you, that thing was inches away from getting out and the game being over. It almost ended on a grand slam, hit the very top of the wall as Ackley leapt up, couldn't bring it down. So it stays in the yard, two score. It's a one-run game. And then Rodney gets a big pop-out in foul territory for the first out. Cabrera comes on to pinch hit. He's intentionally walked, so the base is loaded. Elmore standing in, and it looked like the Mariners had a chance to roll a pair and end this ball game.
The 0-2, swing, broke it back, ground ball to third. Seager's got it, Cano for one at second. Relay to first, not in time, wide. Safe at first is Elmore. The throw by Cano pulled Morrison off the bag. Butler scores from third, and the Rays have tied this game.
Now, another underrated play. I mean, there's so many big plays in this one, so it's the kind of game, one-run game, extra inning game. It's the kind of thing that the little plays add up to wins, and one of those little plays was Cano just didn't have a grip at when he tried to turn it to, and the throw went well wide and bounced. Logan Morrison saved the game by making that play and stopping the ball from going, you know, wherever it was going to go. It gets by him, goes down the line, gets into the dugout, whatever. Huge play by Morrison to keep it right there. Because Longoria's at third base at that point. If the ball gets by Morrison, the ball game's over, and Tampa Bay wins. So Rodney gets out of the inning. The save is blown, his second blown save of the season, and we go to extra innings. Now, I laid out McGee and how good McGee has been. He's come back now, and the reason that he's not the closer now coming back is because Brad Boxberger has been the closer this year for Tampa Bay, and he has essentially been invincible this year for Tampa Bay. He's taken the closer's job while McGee has been out with injury, and he's completely run with it. A 1.10 ERA this season, 13 saves, 16 and a third innings. He's given up a grand total of 2 earned runs, and of course, no home runs on the season for Boxberger. The last run he had given up was April 16th, so a month ago. The last extra base hit he gave up was also April 16th, a month ago. 12 appearances since then without a run or an extra base hit, racking up the Ks, barely getting touched. I mean, he's given up, what, 5 singles since then? I mean, he has been dominant. Absolutely dominant. So Kyle Seager striding to the plate once again, and here it is.
0-2 pitch, and Kyle drives it center field. Going back, Kiermaier on the track. Look it up, it's gone! Bye-bye, baby! Kyle Seager does it again with a home run, and the Mariners have a 7-6 lead!
Kyle Seager, have a night! 6 RBIs in this ballgame.
6 RBIs, career high for Kyle Seager, driving in 6. It is hard to get much better than what he did last night. Seager goes, when it's all said and done, 3-for-5, 2 homers, 2 runs scored, and 6 RBIs. He extends his hitting streak. It's now at 12 games, and he's really been on a roll now. You look in his last 18 ball games. He's hitting .333 with 7 dingers, 16 RBIs. He is really starting to cook. And the thing about last night that I find amazing, he hit 2 home runs in the ballgame off of McGee and Boxberger, who they're one of the best 1-2 punches in the game, lefty-righty. They are 2 outstanding bullpen pitchers. I mean, if you combine what they've done last year and this year, their ERA was 1.97 with 224 strikeouts. 2 dominant guys. It's amazing enough to hit one of those home runs in that situation late in the game against one of those guys. But to do it twice, to take each of them deep late in the ball game, it's incredible. An amazing feat last night for Kyle Seager, and he put the team on his back offensively and got it done. 7 runs on the board for the M's, but they still had 3 outs to get. And with a short bullpen, they turned to Joe Bimel to close it down.
Bimel looks in, comes set at the belt. The 0-2 pitch from Joe. Swung on a miss, struck him out. The Mariners win it 7-6 and 10. And they take the series. With Felix on the mound tomorrow, they go to 5-3 on this road trip. And if you've got your blood pressure medicine, you may want to pop a couple.
Joe Bimel collects his 5th career save, his first since 2009 when he was with the Washington Nationals. It had been a while since he was at the back closing out a ball game, earning a save. It's funny, his first one came in 2006 with the LA Dodgers. And it's funny to look back on. It was a 2-inning save. So here are some of the guys that Joe Bimel retired to earn his first career save. Former Mariner, Omar Vizquel, Barry Bonds, Steve Finley. Those are the 3 outs he collected in the 8th inning to collect his first career save. And then in the 9th inning, he gave up a home run to Ray Durham. Then he got Nicro Feliz, and then current St. Louis Cardinals manager Mike Matheny for the last out to earn his first career save against the San Francisco Giants in 2006. So here he is again taking the mound in 2015 and getting the save. Here he was talking about it after the ball game.
Just saying, very, very amped. You know, with the second hitter, I actually had to step back a little bit and realize, you know, hey, you're in the game right now and you're still pitching. Can't let the adrenaline like overtake you and control you. So if you use adrenaline, it's good. But if you, you know, let it run you and you're throwing pitches up there you're not supposed to be throwing, that's not a good thing. But, you know, since I am so old, I was able to use my wisdom and in my favor.
When was the last time you felt adrenaline like that out on the hill?
It's been a long time. It really has. You know, usually I try and come in as calm as I can, and I like to have my wits with me. So it can work in your favor. I feel like it did, you know, once I settled down and was able to harness it. But like I was saying, there's no chance I'm going to be able to sleep tonight. No chance.
Remember your last save? I'm trying to remember. Did you have one last year?
No, I think maybe 2009. Is that right? Yeah.
2009.
Yeah. I remember they said I was going to be the closer, and I might have got one save, blew one, and then I was out.
Yeah. Crazy win in a lot of levels.
It really was, and it was not fast. So,
no.
By any means.
There it was. That's good stuff there from Joe Bimal. What a great story. After what is, let's say, tough offseason back with the M's, and he has helped really stabilize the bullpen. And he was necessary tonight, essentially the last man standing. Talked about the six-man bullpen, but Carson Smith not available. He's carried a heavy workload as of late. Lloyd McClendon also wanted to stay away from Mark Lowe, so Joe Bimal was the guy to close it down. Last man standing, and he did. And speaking of McClendon, here he was talking about the game. And what was just a wild, wild win.
Did we win that game? I've been around a long time. It's the first one for me. In a lot of different respects. There were a lot of weird things that went on in that ball game. It's, you know, sometimes it's winning ugly, but you win. That's all that counts. So I guess that sums it up.
Those were two pretty impressive at-bats by Kyle Seager. Different, you know, left-handed versus right-handed, different counts. What did you see that impressed you in both of those?
Well, I mean, he got home runs off guys that don't give him up. I mean, they've been pretty impressive this year, and he was just phenomenal tonight. He saved us. He saved us.
Bimal, why Bimal there in the tenth? I don't know who else you had, but it's... What was the thought process?
Well, a lot of factors that went into it. I really wanted to stay away from Lowe. The only way I was going to bring him in that game was against Longoria.
Okay. Carson Smith, you didn't want to go back-to-back?
No, I was not using him. Yeah. And, you know, it goes back to my thinking. Sometimes you cannot be afraid to lose a game in order to put yourself in position to win six or seven down the road. I was just not going to use it.
And there it was. So the Mariners get the win in extra innings, 7-6. Middle of the order had a big night. Cano with two more hits. Nelson Cruz with two hits, including a little milestone for him.
The 1-1 to Cruz swung on and hit up the middle. Diving play made by the shortstop. Throw over to first, and Cruz beats it out for a base hit. So the leadoff man is aboard here for the Mariners in the 10th inning.
And there it is, career base hit number 1,000 for Nelson Cruz. He had number 999, a single to right field in the third. Career base hit number 1,000, take that ball out of the ball game.
Yeah, career hit number 1,000. Of course, an infield base hit for Nelson Cruz. Seager had three hits. Morrison with a couple of knocks as well. Contributions again up and down. But Kyle Seager, man, this line looks pretty. 3-for-5, 2 runs. 6 RBIs, 2 home runs, 1 off of McGee, 1 off of Boxberger. What a ball game. Mariners win 7-6. They've taken the series. They have a winning road trip, a chance to come home And how sweet would it be to come home with a sweep over Tampa Bay and a chance to come home 500. Now 22-23 on the season, and they're going to hand the ball to the king, Felix Hernandez. No better guy to have the ball today than Felix Hernandez. Felix on the season, 7-1 with a 2.19 ERA. First pitch at 10:10 a.m. But this one is not going to be easy. This is a dream pitching matchup. Chris Archer is going to go for Tampa Bay, 5-4 with a 2.40 ERA. It's been quite a year for Archer. He gave up 3 runs in his very first start and then hung a 0 in his second start, a 0 in his third start, a 0 in his fourth start, and a 0 in his fifth start. He went 4 starts in a row without giving up an earned run. And then hit a bump in the road. Baltimore got him for 4. And then Texas, his worst start of the season. He went 3 1/3 and gave up 5 earned runs. But he's bounced back pretty nicely since. 7 innings against the Yankees, 2 earned runs, 6 against the Twins, 1 earned run, and then 5 1/3 last time against Oakland, and has given up 1 earned run. He's racked up some pretty big strikeout numbers, fanned 11 Blue Jays earlier this year. He's hit 9 once against Boston, 8 a couple of times, once against Texas, once against Oakland. A very talented pitcher, right-handed pitcher. He can really bring it. He's got some gas. He's got some great stuff. He'll pump it up. I mean, he sits 96. He can really bring it with the fastball. He's got the slider at 89, and he works in a pretty good change as well that we'll talk about. He gets an extreme number of ground balls compared to a lot of other changeups, and it's a hard changeup and one that he models himself after Felix Hernandez. In fact, here is Chris Archer talking about how much watching Felix Hernandez has molded what he does.
It's fun to watch good pitchers do their thing, just not against our team. I mean, the last time he faced us was the first time I've ever seen him live. And so it just, I mean, what I take from it is the effectiveness of a changeup to righties or lefties. And there's a... not a myth, but what's common is to throw your changeup 8 to 10 miles an hour slower than your fastball. His changeup, some of his fastballs and some of his changeups are the same speed. So it's more about movement and location than speed, or it can be. Mm-hmm. So for me, our coach has been preaching that a changeup can be a power pitch. And yesterday was a perfect example of, I think he topped out at 94, and he threw some changeups that topped out at 91. His changeup's 88 to 91, his fastball's 90 to 94. So for me, it just shows that it can be a power pitch, and I don't have to try to finesse it. I can count on the grip, taking a little bit of speed off, and maybe adding a little bit of movement.
So it's working for Archer, and he was talking about that after the last time that Felix faced Tampa Bay, and he has had some pretty grand moments against Tampa Bay. The last time he saw the Rays, he went 7, gave up 4 hits, no runs, 1 walk, fanned a career-high 15 in the game.
The 1-2, strike 3, called. He gets him looking, 93 miles an hour, and he sears him on the inside corner. DeJesus caught looking. And that is 13 strikeouts for the King today in St. Pete. It ties a career high.
And he went on to fan 15 the last time he was in St. Pete. So we'll see what he has in store here. And, of course, he had the perfect game 3 starts ago against Tampa Bay at Safeco Field. Sandwiched between there was a 6 2/3 effort in Tampa. Gave up 4 earned runs. But he's kind of out of his way his last few outings against the Tampa Bay Rays. 15 strikeouts, 12 punchouts, 9-9-11. I mean, he's really racked up the K's against Tampa Bay. We'll see what he has in store today against the Rays as the M's go for the sweep. And one thing with Felix is, great pitcher, obviously, but he seems to even raise his game to another level with runners in scoring position. The numbers get pretty sick when you break down what opponents are doing with runners in scoring position. We talked about that recently.
An aspect of Felix Hernandez that we probably don't talk about enough is how good he is with runners in scoring position. Since the beginning of the 2013 season, he's just allowing a .218 batting average, which is outstanding. But with runners in scoring position, it's even better. .179 with runners in scoring position since the beginning of 2013. That's second best behind Darvish, despite Felix, you know, he's pitched 20 more games and has a lot more innings at this point. So an incredible mark. And I'll start with you, Blow. Is what makes him so good with runners in scoring position?
Well, I think that there are a number of things, Gary. First of all, having the ability to have four pitches that are all plus pitches and the ability to throw them four strikes or out of the strike zone whenever you want to is a huge advantage for any pitcher. I think that when you think about just getting hits off of Felix, that's hard enough. But I've thought about this before, especially, and I think you and I were having the conversation, and when you were telling me those numbers, I started to think about it. And I think that most times when a pitcher has runners in scoring position, as an offensive player, you're always taught, you talk about the pressure is on that pitcher. I think when Felix is on the mound, I think it's just the opposite. And I think of that because, one, he's obviously great. We all agree to that. But I think he basically limits your opportunities. And as an offense, you know that. And I think it applies more pressure so that when he does get runners in scoring position, you might feel that that's going to be your only chance to score runs off of him on that night. And I think that puts a lot of pressure and tension on whoever is at the plate at the time.
Yeah, I think, too, it goes to his ability to compete. When he gets in trouble, he has a way to get out of it. He just bows his neck and goes after the hitters. And I think a lot of it has to do with that changeup, because it's either a swing and a miss pitch or it's a pitch that a hitter is going to hit on the ground, and you get out of trouble by getting ground balls. But I just think it's his refuse to bend or refuse to break ability in those situations. He becomes even tougher. He's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. But in that situation, he just finds a way to locate a pitch or use that changeup or the others that he can also throw for a strike to get out of trouble, Dave.
Well, he's talented. He can execute. He's unafraid. You can't beat that combination. And with the depth of pitches that he does have, put all that together, plus an unbelievable desire to win, a tremendous willpower, you can't ask for a better package.
I think you three summed it up. I mean, between what he has, what he's able to throw, and the ability to compete, first and foremost, I think, with him. I mean, that is something that takes him to another level. He could be great with the pitches he has, but when he gets into situations and has that desire and has that competitiveness, and, you know, he's said it before. He's had a bad outing before, and the first thing he'll say after is, this will never happen again, no more. And gives up a home run. We've seen it before in the first inning. Shuts him down usually after something like that. That's it. No more. He has a different level that he goes to in that mindset.
Well, I think that to those points, I've played with pitchers that probably compete just as hard. I've played with pitchers that are out there, and I know that they don't have fear. And I think when you put all these things together, I think we're fortunate. Dave and I have talked about it many times on TV. We are fortunate to get a chance to watch him every fifth day because he's special. There's other guys that I think compete as hard or have the same desire, but they just can't get it done at the rate that he does because he's special.
Yeah,
for all those reasons.
Yeah, and I go back to Jamie Moyer, who won 145 games in a Mariner uniform more than anybody. He always said, you know, you're one pitch away from getting out of trouble. So the concentration level for Jamie was just sky high, and it's the same thing, I think, for Felix. You know, when he gets in trouble, he's able to locate that next pitch, the pitch he wants to throw with conviction, and it's one of the best pitches in all the baseball, and gets out of trouble.
And I think the last thing for me, Gary, on that thing too, is he's had a lot of practice over the years trying to hang on to one or two run leads. There's something to that too.
Yeah, that's a great point. That is a great point. Great points all the way around. I mean, good stuff. I think you're absolutely right. Rick Riz, Mike Blowers, Dave Sims, Shannon Dreyer. Right on all points, on all accounts. And boy, the numbers are just striking when you look at them, too. Only 17 extra base hits and now 2.25 seasons with runners in scoring position. I mean, it's just ridiculous what he does. He's able to flip the script, really, and put the pressure on the hitter, which is easier said than done when you're the pitcher with runners in scoring position.
And finally, you know, there's so much history made last time that Felix took the mound. He passed Hall of Famer Catfish Hunter on the all-time strikeout list, which is, I mean, amazing to think about in itself. He's tied with Oral Hershiser now. So he passes the Hall of Famer. He's tied with Oral Hershiser, played 18 years and had a tremendous career. He is tied with a guy who had a great career, and he is 29. And some of the names he has in sight now, I mean, Dazzy Vance, he's about 31 strikeouts away. He was in the Hall of Fame. He's got a chance to get Fernando Valenzuela this year. He's got a chance to pass Roy Halladay this year. He's got a chance to get El Presidente Dennis Martinez this year on the strikeout list. And Tim Wakefield is there. Even a chance at a guy like Vita Blue. I mean, those are the names that he's climbing the ladder to pass all in this year. And not too far, Jim Palmer, Hall of Famer. And then it's seemingly one Hall of Famer after another on the strikeout list as he continues. But he's just racking up the ridiculous numbers, just throws out Felix quality starts one after another. And Lloyd McClendon talked about it too and certainly appreciates what he sees every 5 days from the King.
He was outstanding. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing how this guy can refocus, you know, after some adversity. And I mean, after that home run, he really, really got into that ball game. I think he was a little ticked off with that pitch, and they got nothing else the rest of the way from him.
When he does get in trouble a few times, that happens, Skip. Where does he go? Because his ERA with runners in scoring position is about 1.65.
Well, he goes to a place that you and I have no idea how to get there, that's for sure. I mean, his competitive spirits take over, and, I mean, he really gets after it pretty good.
And then it seems like every start, Skip, that he reaches or passes another milestone, 8 strikeouts in that ballgame last night. He moves by Catfish Hunter. Then he ties Oral Hershiser for strikeouts, 2014 for 70th place all time in strikeouts, one milestone after another.
Yeah, I tell you, when it's all said and done with this guy's career, there's going to be a lot of people behind him, that's for sure. He's not going to be looking up at many.
What's it like managing this guy?
Well, it's special, you know, to have a guy that's such a competitor and such a great teammate. It's really a special thing to be a part of. And, you know, I tell our guys all the time, don't take it for granted, because we may never see another one like him in our lifetime.
And I don't think we do take it for granted. And he takes the mound this morning trying to pitch the Mariners to a sweep. Well, Shannon Dreher had a great conversation with Jay Happ about his last start in Baltimore, about coming back to Toronto and pitching where he spent some years, about some of his ex-teammates as well, some great pitchers. And here is Shannon with Jay Happ.
This has to be kind of a strange couple of days for you. Yesterday, new catcher, rain, mud, delays, everything. How do you put all that into words, everything yesterday?
It was a frustrating day. I think looking back on it, I'm sure they tried to make the best call they could. I think it would have been nice if we would have just delayed the game and started it when that window was available, so where I could try to give the team some innings. And, you know, going on this long road trip and a lot of days without a day off, it's kind of frustrating that our bullpen had to pick up those 7 innings, but they did an unbelievable job, and we'll try to, you know, make it through this next stretch. But, you know, I would have liked to have been able to go back out and, you know, provide some more innings.
How do you know? I mean, we see games start in kind of a drizzle sometimes, and sometimes they're played straight through. How do you know when, okay, it's time to get out of here?
You know, I didn't. I just assumed we were going to keep going. I went out there for that 3rd inning, and the umpire asked. He just said, they're going to put some turfis on. Let me know if it's good. And then before I could even get out there, one of their grounds crew went over and told the umpire that it was going to be pretty steady for a while. And he made the decision at that point to pull the tarp. So we were kind of at the mercy of if it was going to let up or not, and it just took too long.
You had a new catcher back there yesterday. It's funny, we talked about that in spring training. You got to know Zunino and then Sucre, and I guess you're the break in the new guy type thing.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, he was really willing to try to learn kind of how I do things, and willing for me to shake and do whatever was necessary to try to get on the same page. And I think his willingness is a great thing. You know, he wants to learn. So we'll get to know each other more and more as we go. But I think he did a great job, and I look forward to working with him some more.
What do you need from your catcher? What's the most important thing they can give you?
You know, once he kind of has an idea of how you pitch, just to instill some confidence and, you know, during the course of a game and some, you know, kind of a, once you kind of feel like he has a good game plan, then you kind of, you have that trust where maybe you're not sure, you're between two pitches, you'll kind of go with how he's reading the game.
Because he's got a different view from you, I would imagine.
So. Yeah, you know, he's trying to read bats too and see guys in the box, if they're moving a little bit in the box and whatnot, maybe what they're looking for or what they're trying to do. So maybe some stuff that, you know, I can't quite pick up from the pitcher's mound.
So today you're here, you're in Toronto, a place that was home for you for a little bit. We saw a pretty large media contingent talking to you for a good amount of time. What's it like to come back and step into this building again?
It's interesting. You know, you kind of have, you know, memories, I guess, are tied to a smell sometimes. The smell of this place is the same. It's interesting. You know, I called this place home for a couple of years, and, you know, it's good to be back. I did enjoy my time here. I think this is a great city. So it's definitely a little bit weird to be on this side.
As a pitcher, what did you take from your years here?
You know, this can be a challenging place to pitch, definitely. You kind of got to try to put that out of your head as far as the dimensions and how the ball travels and just try to go about your business. And, you know, I'll be interested to see how this new turf kind of plays. You know, it was pretty quick, you know, the last several years. But, you know, we'll see.
Probably not a good place to put the ball on the ground, it sounds like. It's pretty thick out there.
Yeah, well, it was the other way before, where if you hit it just to the right or left of a guy, you know, it was buzzing by there pretty quick, but I think it seems like it slowed down a little bit. At least that's what I've heard, so it's not a bad thing for pitchers.
I wanted to took a look at the teams that you played on. You've played with some very interesting pitchers, and I'm kind of wondering what you took from each, if anything at all, and just kind of throw some names out at you and start with Halliday here.
You know, he was a really quiet guy. I think it took a little while to kind of get to know him and kind of try to get broken in a little bit with him. But he was a guy where he was very serious, very hard worker. You kind of take his mentality, the way he goes about his business, more than, you know, he's not a guy who's going to sit down and kind of preach to you about baseball. He's kind of going to go out and be a bulldog, and he's trying to throw a complete game every time.
And he was a mental guy. That when he kind of went through the tough stuff, it all came down to that side. Did you ever talk to him about that before?
No, he really didn't open up that much, you know, as far as the mental side. I just, again, I think it was just more kind of just looking from afar, kind of how he goes about his business. And, you know, he was a professional and had made the necessary adjustments. So you kind of got to take it from looking outside, looking in.
What about in Philly? There's some pretty good lefties that you had on some of your teams.
Yeah, Cliff Lee, Cole Hamels, some guys that, you know, have had great careers and, you know, still are. So Cliff was a super simple guy. He just, it was kind of no nonsense. He just assumed he was going to be dominant all the time, and he was. But, you know, he had some issues too early on in his career, and he had a huge bounce back and kind of never looked back. And, you know, I can take a lot from that because I've had some struggles and trying to kind of do the same thing and stay positive and expect good results.
What about Hamels?
You know, there's a guy too where it's a little different. He wasn't as casual about it, but he was a guy that had the same or if not more confidence. I mean, he was a guy who knew that he was really good, and he just went out and trusted that, put the work in on the side, and you just go have fun and execute, and good things are going to happen. So, you know, I got to know him pretty good throughout my time there, and, you know, consider him a friend.
There was a guy who had about 80 years of experience, too, on one of your staffs, and Jamie Moyer. Did you?
Jamie was one of my probably all-time favorite teammates. You know, he was the guy. He was probably the only guy. I know a lot of people talk about, oh, I'm going to try to pick up this and that and whatever from each guy, but he was the one guy that I've dealt with who sought other people out to talk about the game of baseball and the mental side of it and what's going through your head in certain situations. And he couldn't get enough of talking about it, and I couldn't get enough of hearing about it. I loved it. So, you know, I definitely will remember the conversations we had and appreciate kind of, you know, him being willing to do that, you know, because not everybody is. Everybody has their own routine and things to do, but he really sought guys out, and I thought that was pretty special.
Is there anybody who ever helped with a pitch?
You know, for a while there, actually, Roy Halladay, one thing he kind of taught me on when I used to throw quite a few more cutters was just to tuck my thumb a little bit. And I kind of rolled with that for about a year and a half when I was really using that pitch a little bit more. And that was just something that I remember talking on the bench, trying to pull some info out of him. And he was like, oh, this is all I do. And then, you know, I get everybody, you know what I mean? So he obviously had a lot of success with that pitch.
It's been a short time you've been with the Mariners, but anything different that you're doing or that you've kind of learned since you started working with them?
You know, at this point, I feel good about kind of the routine I have and, you know, continuing to have confidence and trying to keep that confidence regardless of, you know, good or bad. Just kind of believing in myself and kind of at the point where, you know, I feel like my best years are ahead of me. So I'm, you know, really trying to kind of stay true to kind of what kind of pitcher I am and trust in the results.
One strike away from baseball history. Hernandez looks in, the windup, and the 2-2 pitch. Strike three called. Felix Hernandez pumps his arms in the air. Felix has just thrown the first perfect game in Seattle Mariners history. He's being mobbed by his teammates behind the mound. He's done it. He's done it. Felix Hernandez, a no-hit perfect game. The first in Mariner history. The fourth no-hitter in Mariner history. Holy smokes. What a performance by King Felix this afternoon.
See you later.